I'm Anita Minute is a podcast rooted in spotlighting moms and their journeys into motherhood. Brought to life by the company Ama & Co., this podcast is a means to build a community and raise awareness on the highs and lows a mother endures to bring a child into this world. Thanks for listening in and join me in welcoming another mom onto the show. Hi, and welcome back to I'm Anita Minute. My mission with this podcast has always been to empower mothers, current or future, in the context of pregnancy, labor and delivery, and postpartum. Whether it's highlighting moms or experts to share knowledge and experiences, in being one of our listeners, you feel that you've taken something away from each episode. I hope you feel connected to our community. Today, I'm joined by a mom of a six-month-old baby girl who is willing to share her fairly traumatic delivery story. Nicole, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Margaret. I appreciate it.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Nicole. I'm currently living in Collegeville, Pennsylvania with my husband and daughter, Sienna Kate. I'm currently a speech therapist with Penn Medicine at Home. So I do home health, palliative, and hospice services. And I've been with Penn Medicine for about 3.5 years now. And I've been a speech therapist for about 5 years total.
Nice. So how did you and your husband meet?
So we actually met at Penn State senior year. We actually met via Tinder, but I like to kind of embellish the story and say that we did technically meet at the library. So we met in person at the library, but we technically met through Tinder, if that makes sense.
Wait, so did you guys meet as acquaintances and then Tinder kind of suggested you date?
Yeah, so total strangers. Oh. I mean, all Tinder really does is connect you to people nearby, so I didn't feel as bad. But yeah, we'd never met before. One of his sisters was friends with one of my friends, but we never like crossed paths or anything. I always am very grateful for Tinder. And of course, on our wedding website, it says like, you know, oh, we met in the library, Petit Library, but it actually was technically through Tinder.
Yeah, you needed a public space, so that's why it was the library.
Yeah, so after Tinder connected us, you know, we messaged a little bit, and then we officially met up at Petit Library. We're both studying for exams, and we just grabbed coffee, and then we had our first official date at a restaurant called The Deli when State College actually doesn't exist anymore. I'm really sad about it.
Yeah. That sucks. And that happened to us too, because I think for one of our anniversaries, I was like, oh, I'm going to do something so romantic. I'm going to find that restaurant and book a reservation. And I'm looking it up and I was like, wait, what happened? And yeah, it's, I guess it was like bought out by a different owner and stuff. It was weird. I was like, ah, okay.
Yeah. So we went right before I found out I was pregnant with Sienna. It was like October of 2021, I believe. And we did a little State College trip just to kind of reminisce. We did an overnight and we were so excited to go to the deli, like, oh, where it all started. And it was like vacant for sale. And I'm like, oh my God. It is what it is.
They also took down my wedding venue, if it makes you feel better.
Where did you get married?
We got married in New Rochelle in New York. So it's this little strip that's on the water by the Long Island Sound. And I was like, oh, let's book a dinner there. Like, that'll be nice. And we find out it's now like waterfront condos. So,
so
it's completely gone. Yeah. Aww. I mean, it's fine, but it's just kind of funny. So anyway, you guys got married and you were pregnant with Sienna in October of 2021. How did you know it was time for you guys to have a baby?
Yeah, it's a great question. I feel like there's never a perfect time to have a baby because money, money, money. There's always like something involved or trying to climb up the career ladder. But our biggest thing was making sure that I was out of debt for my student loans and that we felt good financially and like travel wise, like we knocked off a lot of stuff too. It was pretty hard because we got married in October of 2019 and immediately after, like, 3 months later, the pandemic hit. So a lot of our travel plans were kind of put on hold. So there are still things that are still on the bucket list, kind of put on hold. But I actually used those few years as an opportunity to really tackle my debt and get out of debt. and have some more financial goals resolved because we couldn't get the travel stuff done.
Yeah.
So after we finally had our honeymoon, since our first one was canceled due to COVID, we went to St. Lucia and we just figured, you know what? Financially, we're doing pretty well. And, you know, we have a little townhouse with a yard and all that. And we have the dog and we're out of debt. So, you know, let's start a family.
Yeah. Awesome. And I think that the pandemic is interesting because it kind of threw a lot of people out for a loop. And yeah. At first, I think everyone's like, it's 2 weeks, it's 4 weeks, it's 6 weeks. And then you're like, all right, I need to like create new goals because this is not going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
So definitely. Yeah, that's awesome. How was your pregnancy overall?
My pregnancy overall was really great, very unremarkable. And I was very blessed. I went to the gym daily, made sure I was eating right. I worked full time throughout my pregnancy. Mm-hmm. My job is pretty high stress, but I was able to, you know, make myself some accommodations, like take more frequent breaks at work and schedule patients so that I wasn't too overwhelmed. I had the classic, you know, nausea, food aversions in the beginning, first trimester. Second trimester was great.
What was a big food aversion for you? I'm just curious.
Oh, God. Biggest food aversion for me. I love coffee. I'm obsessed with coffee since I was like 10, which is really bad. My parents are going to yell at me for saying that. But for some reason, caffeine, coffee especially, I just would gag. And it actually was a blessing because you're not supposed to have that much caffeine anyway. So I was trying to limit myself to like just a cup a day. And it ended up working out because I was just...
Yeah.
Gagging every time.
I had a really big aversion to garlic. And I love garlic. Yeah. Wow. And all the cooking, I love garlic. Wow. And so my husband would be like sauteing vegetables for me while I'm pregnant. And I'm like, I don't want to eat any of this. I hate the smell of the house right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
I definitely feel that because I think it was mostly the first trimester. I could not eat anything like fish, vegetables, like anything good for you. I was like, I don't want it. I want like bagels and cream cheese, mac and cheese, all the carbs and cheese. So yeah, I definitely like you put a vegetable in front of me. I was like, oh my God.
Well, it sounds like you had a pretty good lifestyle in terms of being active and working out. Going into your second and third trimester, what was your perception of delivery and labor?
Yeah. So around March, I had a conversation with the anesthesiologist at the hospital that I was going to deliver at. And it was a really productive conversation because I made it very clear that I have a low pain tolerance. So I had a spinal fusion when I was 13 years old, and it was essentially my entire spine, T2 to L3. And it was a 10-hour procedure and definitely the worst pain in my life. And I just knew, like, pain-wise, I'm not one of those people who tolerates pain well. I just know that about myself. I give mad props to the women who deliver naturally. I'm cheering them on from the sidelines, but I could never do it. So I made it very clear that I wanted either a spinal or an epidural done because as far as, like, opiates and fentanyl and all that, I just knew... all it really does is make you loopy. It doesn't really actually attack the pain at the source. So I made that very clear in my birth plan during my second trimester. Mm-hmm. So I was able to talk to the anesthesiologist ahead of time, and he essentially told me, because of the nature of my spinal fusion and my back, that I would have a 50-50 shot of the epidural working. And if that didn't work, I had about a 50-50 shot of the spinal working. So I figured, okay, well, if each of those are 50-50, one of them maybe has to work.
Right.
That was really it for like the birth plan.
Yeah. It does sound like you did some preparation for this and you actually had the conversations with the doctors. So are you someone who generally is a big planner and scheduled, organized person?
Yes, to a T. Very type A. Everything has to be planned to the last minute detail, even details like my wedding. I mean, I had an entire plan for when, what type of chord progression and how I wanted the music played and who was walking out at what time. And yeah, I'm just very detail oriented. And when it came to my delivery, I was definitely aware that unfortunately you can't prepare for everything. So emergencies happen, things happen. And I told the hospital staff, like, of course, whatever is medically necessary, I'll absolutely get done. But this is what I'm striving for, essentially.
So how did your delivery story go? How did it start?
So basically, the plan was for me to be induced at 39 weeks so that they can place the epidural when I'm 4 centimeters dilated because of the nature of my spine. If they placed it too late, there was a good chance that it wouldn't work, and they obviously couldn't place it in too early. So they made it very clear on 4 centimeters. That was like kind of my golden time frame.
Okay.
And because of that, they wanted to monitor me and induce me so that I wouldn't accidentally go into labor at home and it would have been too late and I couldn't get the epidural. So everyone was kind of on board with the same plan. You know, I talked to the OB ahead of time, and 39 weeks, I went in for my scheduled induction on Monday, and everything was going really great. I got Pitocin. I was contracting exactly when I should. I was playing a Mario Party with my husband.
Oh, awesome. You guys brought the Switch over? That's smart. I didn't do that.
I told him to bring it. Because at first he was like, oh, bring my Switch. And I'm like, actually, that might not be a bad idea. So I was like feeling good. I got my contractions, but I'm like, you know, still feeling good. It's I went in around evening time. So it was like maybe 6 o'clock. I had dinner before I left, and middle of the night, you know, I started getting more contractions. And then at one point, I was on some kind, I don't know if it was fentanyl or what, but I was so loopy. I started singing Yellow Submarine from the Beatles. And I was just like feeling really good. And everything was going as planned. And then that morning rolled around. It was officially Tuesday morning, like 7 a.m. And my contractions really started getting very close together. I don't remember exactly.
It took like a 12 hours for you to actually have the.
Yeah. So yeah, it was like 6 or 7. Honestly, it's all kind of a blur, especially with the drugs. And it got to a point because they were doing cervix checks every, I believe every hour. And it got to the point where it was about 7 a.m. And they were like, okay, you're about 4 centimeters dilated. And I was like, okay, showtime. Let's get the anesthesiologist up here. Let's try this epidural. Ready to go. Everything's going as planned. And I'm really uncomfortable at this point. My contractions are coming very frequently. And so I actually, as I'm in labor, essentially, and contracting, I heard the anesthesiologist in the hallway. And she's like, who told her that there's a 50-50 chance of the epidural working based on her history? And my husband and I kind of looked at each other. We're like, I hope we heard that wrong. And the anesthesiologist who came in was absolutely incredible. She was a wonderful woman, very good bedside manner, very compassionate, very knowledgeable. And she essentially told me that whoever told me about the 50-50 was completely inaccurate. She said that if she did the epidural on me, it would be about a 15% chance, not 50, 15% chance of it working. And out of that percentage, there is a lot of risk involved as far as paralysis, infection, pain, irreversible damage. And she even said with me and any of my colleagues from anesthesiology school, we wouldn't feel comfortable doing this unless this is something you absolutely want to do. So as I'm contracting and not in the best frame of mind, of course, I'm absolutely hysterical because I just felt like the anesthesiology team and the OBGYN team were not communicating with one another, even though they clearly stated before I went in what the plan was. And it was really upsetting because had this been communicated to me ahead of time, it would have completely changed my trajectory as far as my birth plan. So I was really upset. And, you know, she kind of weighed in all the options. You know, she's like, we can try the epidural. And I said, well, what about the spinal? Because that was also advertised mm-hmm. to me.
Right.
And she said, oh, our hospital doesn't do spinals, only for C-sections. And I'm like, that was never explained to me. They don't do spinals for vaginal deliveries.
What's the difference between a spinal and epidural?
So it's essentially, it's very similar, except the epidural has a catheter, mm-hmm. it's just a different mechanism. It does the same job, like it essentially mm-hmm. paralyzes you from the waist down versus like something like an opiate where it just kind of like makes you loopy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it actually attacks the pain at the source. And I know like one of my friends who delivered at Penn was able to get a spinal for a vaginal delivery. So it didn't really sound outrageous to me.
Right.
So she essentially told me that, you know, my only options are to deliver naturally without mm-hmm. any pain medication or management, to have a C-section. We can try the spinal, not an epidural, but a spinal for a C-section. But there's also a chance that that might not work. Yeah. Or to have a C-section where I'm put under and my husband can't be there and I'll be kind of out of commission for a few days from the anesthesia. And none of those options was anywhere near what I wanted.
Right. I mean, you had like three totally different things on the table when you walked in, and then it's a completely yeah. different set of options all of a sudden.
Yeah. And during this time, I'm in a lot of excruciating pain from labor, and it was just really, really upsetting to me to hear this, because I felt like nobody was communicating with me or with one another. And the interdisciplinary team could have done such a better job with making sure that everyone was on the same page. I remember at one point, one of my OBs for one of my general checkups in April or May was like, you know, what did anesthesiology say? And I remember asking like, well, didn't they document it right. in the chart? Because every phone call, you know, every visit has to be documented in the medical chart. So why aren't you seeing that? Like, why mm-hmm. are you depending on me, the patient, when right. I'm not like, even though I'm a medical professional, I'm a speech therapist, you know, I'm right. not like an OB or a resident or anything, you know, so I'm not in the know with.
Yeah. And also you were not like in the clearest state of mind to be like having full blown conversations with different people in the medical field.
Right.
Yeah. What was your husband doing at this time? I'm guessing he's like literally right next to you.
Yeah, he was holding my hand. Yeah, I mean, there wasn't that much that he could do besides say, you know, whatever you choose, I'm here for you, I support you. He kind of expressed the same amount of concern to the anesthesiologist that I did. And what was tricky was that it wasn't this anesthesiologist's fault. It wasn't the nurse's fault. It was really kind of like a team effort. I know she wasn't involved in my care. You know, she was like contracted mm-hmm. with the hospital. So it's not like I was like getting angry at her. So I didn't want to be too emotional because I was like trying to make a really good decision, right. a really big decision. But we were both very concerned, and we expressed, you know, this is like absolutely not what was communicated to me. This was our plan. And, you know, this is really upsetting because if I would have known this, I would have done a scheduled C-section and we would have had completely different. I went through a lot of unnecessary pain with the cervical exams because at one point Sienna's head was in a certain way and it was really hurting when they checked my cervix and yeah. how dilated I was. And there were like some issues that came up and a lot of unnecessary pain that I didn't have to endure if I just went for the elected C-section. So, you know, we were both really upset. And, you know, of course, I always ask, what would you do if it was your daughter? And she's like, I can't answer that. And I'm like, ah, I just wish they would answer that.
You're like, I want to phone a friend. So how yes. did you guys eventually arise to your decision?
Yeah, so eventually I knew with the 85% chance of the epidural failing and then possibly causing infection and long-term effects, I figured that that was not a good option. So I opted in for option B, which was to get a scheduled, essentially it's an elective C-section, but it's with the spinal mm-hmm. for the anesthesia and pain management instead of being under general mm-hmm. anesthesia. And I got very, very lucky because my amazing anesthesiologist walked me through everything, had the nicest nurse. and I had a wonderful, wonderful C-section. They got the spinal in right away. And immediately my contractions went away. I was completely paralyzed from the waist down, which is what's supposed to happen. And I heard my beautiful baby crying when she came into this world and became Earthside. And then I watched my husband hold her and cut the cord. And it was just such a magical experience. I know it sounds super corny, but
no, I think it's really nice how you told that, because I think a lot of times C-sections get a bad rap, right? Because it's usually like the last resort. And at that point, something is wrong, or the mom's in trouble, or the baby's in trouble, right? At that point, it's like, we have to operate. And I think you're telling a different view, which is that you were in a lot of pain and this was the option that was given to you. And once it was in your heart and, you know, you kind of made that choice, then you've kind of felt at ease in a way, right? You felt like, okay, things were starting to get back on in control after making that decision. And you had a different, you had a positive experience with C-section.
I did. And I was upset. My husband and I were upset because after I made my decision, it was a few hours later that I got it. So I was laboring, active labor, contractions.
More unnecessary pain. Yeah.
More unnecessary pain for hours. Oh, and then I don't know if my OB had an emergency, but again, the whole lack of interdisciplinary communication. The nurse was wonderful, holding my hand, you know, reassuring me that everything was going to be okay. But had I known that, you know, let's say the OB had an emergency, it's going to be another 20 minutes, I feel like I would have had more peace of mind. And I know I made the right decision for myself, because the information that I had, given my history with my spinal fusion, the exertion of pushing and all that is just like, it would have caused a lot of issues in the long run.
That's what I was thinking when you mentioned the spinal fusion. Like, I don't really know the mechanics of how that would work as Sienna was like making her way down. I could imagine it was super painful, which is why when she was at the, when they felt the cervix, you could feel her and she was probably like pushing against a certain part of your back at that point. That's why I'm surprised they didn't just kind of suggest a C-section to you in any of your OB appointments.
I know. It's amazing, because when I went to St. Lucia, the spinal fusion that I had is so rare. I've only met maybe like five people who've had mine. And when I went to St. Lucia for our honeymoon, there were two other couples with wives who both had spinal fusion for scoliosis. And they were like, oh, you know, good luck with the C-section when you guys have kids. And I'm like, oh, well, nowadays, you know, you could do vaginal delivery. And they're like, oh, in our day, you know, you had to have a C-section. And I even talked to the OB about it. And they're like, oh, yeah, like we've had, you know, people, even the anesthesiologist, the one who I'm not a fan of, who I spoke with on the phone, was like, oh, yeah, we've had people with spinal fusions. Like, we have that all the time. So that's why I felt like, okay, like this is definitely possible. But, you know, as I was thinking about, you know, being on my back for so long and pushing and all the exertion on the back, it just didn't make sense for my population, or at least for me.
Yeah. Sounds very painful. So you have this beautiful baby in your arms after, I'm guessing they stitch you up and then you're able to hold her. Did you ultimately choose to breastfeed, or did you guys end up doing formula for her?
Yeah, so I chose to breastfeed, and she was able to latch immediately when she came Earthside, which was awesome. So I didn't have any issues. The only thing is, when you are breastfeeding, for most women, it takes about 3 or 4 days to get your milk supply after delivery. So the first couple of days we did formula, because I was like, yeah, she needs to eat. And it was like, you know, this amount. And these are so small.
A little,
like,
yeah.
A peanut.
Tablespoon, yeah.
And of course, they were so respectful. They were like, you know, like, we don't want to push. And I'm like, fed is best. You know, if she needs the nutrition now. Because my milk wasn't in until like Sunday. I delivered Tuesday. It wasn't fully in until Sunday. I had no issues with, you know, getting her formula and providing her with what she needed.
Yeah, good.
But she is exclusively breastfed now.
Okay. I ask because I know with C-section, sometimes it takes a little longer as well. Just your body is still realizing, oh, there's no baby inside. Yeah. I need to start making milk. So yeah, that's why I asked that question. And I feel like I probably did one wrong with my first because my milk didn't come in either. And I didn't think to do formula. Like I literally just didn't even think about it. So you probably starved for like 3 days or so. And then I eventually gave him formula before exclusively breastfeeding him later. So just for anyone listening out there to know, that is an option to do formula and breast milk. So you have this baby, you're recovering in the hospital, everything is fine. When do you guys start recollecting the experience, like you and your husband, or you by yourself, the delivery experience, I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, we were just like on such a high for some reason. Like everybody talks about the newborn phase being like the most exhausting, like horrible, like you're going to hate each other. And we were just like in all of our glory. We had people like sending us meals. We both had off from work and we were just like enjoying every second with her. And she was just like, we just thought she was the most beautiful baby. I mean, everybody says that about their kids, but I was like, oh my God, I can't believe she's mine. Like she's just so perfect. And she was just like so loving too, like really looking at us. And Aww. Oh, we just fell in love just immediately. And of course I was upset that my husband got to hold her first because he did none of the work.
He's like, no, I cut the cord. Okay.
Yeah. Like, wow. Okay. 9 months of pain, but okay. But we still talk about to this day how my husband is probably going to kill me for sharing this, but whatever. He completely hysterically crying when he heard her cry when they, you know, when the doctors pulled her out.
Yeah.
And he just lost it. And it was, it was just like the most magical, because my husband doesn't really, he's not like super like emotional. Right, right. Like, you know, he's a loving man, but he's not like always crying and like, oh, let's talk about her feelings, you know? Yeah. So seeing him cry and just like feel and take it all in was just like such a magical experience for me.
Yeah. Did you cry?
Yes.
You did.
But he actually cried a little more. I mean, there were times postpartum, like a few weeks, you know, where I'd just be like rocking her and like singing some of the songs that my mom sang to me. And I'm just like losing it. And we have this one book that one of my girlfriends got me. I Love You Forever. I Like You For Always. As Long As I'm Living, My Baby You'll Be. And it's just a really sweet book about a child growing up and a mother's love for her child. And then eventually, not to spoil the book, but it's like a 10-page book. But basically, it ends with the little boy who's now a man and he's holding his elderly mother.
I think I've
and
seen
rocking her to sleep. And then eventually his baby and singing the same song. Mm. And literally every time that we read that book to Sienna, we both lose our shit. So we can't, sorry, I don't know if we're allowed to curse on this.
It's really funny.
But yeah, so there's certain things that I can't sing this song, I can't read this book.
Oh because my I'll gosh, just lose it. That's so funny. Yeah. That's awesome. How was your post-op? Let me ask that. This conversation with your doctor at all? Like, did you, I guess I feel like me, if I was in your situation, I would feel some type of way about that experience. It, like that labor and delivery birth plan experience.
Yeah, I was going to file a grievance report and all that, but there was just so much going on with like her social security card. And there was a whole thing with my name. They use like my maiden name instead of my married name. And we had to do all this paperwork after, and then like my job, FMLA stuff. So like, it kind of just like got lost in the shuffle. And it, to this day, I'm always like, I wonder if I should just like explain my situation so that it doesn't happen again, especially for people of my population, you know, the spinal fusion survivors or whatever.
Well, like you said, it's not a lot of people who have this, so they probably just don't know how to work with these cases.
Right. I guess what really bothered me is that the anesthesiologist on the phone was like, oh yeah, we have patients with spinal fusion all the time. And it got me like really confident in their ability to do what they had to do as far as pain management. So I did talk about it with my doctor after, and, you know, they apologized and all that, but like nothing was really resolved.
Yeah.
Nothing really changed. There wasn't like, we're now having a new rule where everything, you have access to your notes and everything is in the medical chart, all conversations. I know at my job, every time that we call a provider or have a discussion with a provider, mm-hmm. we have to document it. So mm-hmm. I feel like that would be a good step in the right direction. But
mm-hmm. so like reflecting on this experience and feeling the way you did in that moment, do you feel like you guys would be open to having a second child?
Yeah, so we definitely want to wait a little bit until we're more settled with finances and all that. But yeah, I think what's good is that this was all really a learning experience for me. Mm. So I know that a vaginal delivery is definitely not something that I want to do, mm-hmm. given the nature of my spine and the history of everything. So I know that all my future children will be C-section. And what's nice is that they got the spinal right away. So whatever they did, they can do again. Mm-hmm. So that does give me peace of mind knowing that they have a history of a like successful spinal that was done. Mm-hmm. So we definitely want to wait just a little bit. I'm not in any rush, like, oh, yeah. Let's start trying, want them to be. So for C-section, I believe they want you to wait about 18 months until you start trying because of, you know, all of the healing that they have to do.
Yeah.
So I would probably agree with that guideline.
Yeah. How was your healing for the C-section?
It was really well overall. I had a beautiful incision, no infection or any issues. The only thing, of course, because of the nature of my back, I did have to get PT for about 4 weeks, just because when you get a C-section done, you're essentially ripping out your entire core. So because of that, then my back was suffering. So I had a very, very weak core and I had to work on strengthening that. So the first couple weeks post-op, I was like barely able to stand up straight and walk. But because I've gotten these episodes in the past, I knew that it's something that's going to resolve. Mm. It's typically 72 hours for me, but because of the C-section exacerbating it, it would probably be like a few weeks and it was.
Yeah.
I had this awesome PT. I saw him as an outpatient and he helped me. And I would say by like mid-July, so I delivered on June 28th, and by mid-July, maybe like July 20th, I was totally back to normal as far as like my walking and my gait and all that, mm-hmm. which was good.
That's awesome. That's awesome that you had like a good recovery. I just asked the second baby question, not to put pressure, but just because I am curious about, you know, how traumatizing that experience was enough to like deflect someone from having another kid. And it doesn't sound like this one was, which is great, because I think for like me, I really had a moment where I was like, I don't know if I want a second kid after the first birth. So
sure, absolutely.
Always just good to hear. It's not something that sits too heavy with you, like not enough to offset you wanting to grow your family even further.
Right.
No pressure on another baby. Sienna's only six.
Yes. I mean, that's like common. Like people are always like, oh, do you want another? Like, it's not like, oh, when are you going to have? It's just mm-hmm. like, you know, are you open to having another? And I always was big on like, I want Sienna to have siblings, mm-hmm. and I felt like that's such a special bond that mm-hmm. no amount of friendship can take away from being raised with someone with the same parents, same vacations, you know, just it's a special bond. So
yeah. Do you and your husband come from big families?
Yes. So he does. Mine's like average. I have an older brother and an older sister, but my husband is actually, they're triplets and twins.
Oh my
all
gosh.
22 months apart. And whenever I tell people that my husband's a triplet, they always turn to me like, oh, are you going to have triplets or twins? And I always say, no, they were test tube babies. So
okay.
It's not really my story to share, but, you know, they were in vitro fertilization. So it wasn't, you know, natural mm-hmm. as far as like genetic. Mm-hmm. So it's all girls and then my husband. So
and then and now he has a daughter. Yeah,
and now he's a daughter.
He's just surrounded
by women.
And
a little dog who's also a girl, too, so he's definitely outnumbered. And it's fun because they're all close in age and they're all just such wonderful people, his siblings, and they're all very, very close. He's very close to his triplet sisters. And and his older sister too. She's awesome. So, yeah, so he came from a relatively large family and then just average for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I love big families. That's really nice. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Is there a particular message you would like to share with any of the moms who are listening?
Yeah, so I guess my number one message would be advocate, advocate, advocate for yourself and for your birth plan, even if it's all in pencil. Make sure that the interdisciplinary team is communicating with one another and that everybody's on the same page, because even though I thought I was doing that come actual birthday, no, that wasn't happening. So just making sure you're advocating for yourself and, you know, you're getting all of your wants and needs across, you know, prior to birth. And you got this.
Nicole, thank you so much for coming onto the show and sharing your story. If you're tuning in, I hope you enjoyed getting to know this mom and her journey. For more information on all things motherhood, please check out our website at www.amaandco.com or follow us on our Instagram, Ama & Co. See you next time.